Action Park Media.
Welcome to Dominic's Den. Today's guest is one of the most influential rappers of all time. He took the game and flipped it upside down, and I really mean that, Joe. You did. You did it for me. And so, born and raised in the South Bronx, founder of Terror Squad, responsible for some of the greatest hip-hop songs in the last 30 years, including some of my favorites, Deep Cover, What's Love, Lean Back, All the Way Up, and we're going to talk about And Sunshine, which got me moving a little bit, even though I'm getting old. Nominated for 5 Grammy Awards. I don't know how you didn't even pick up one, but
that's crazy.
That's crazy, and that's political. Yeah. And you introduced the world to one of, I have him in my top 5. Big Pun, Remy Ma, and DJ Khaled. Everybody, the Don, Fat Joe, thank you for blessing the show, coming on. You said a quote, and I'm really big on quotes because it kind of gives you, for me, it's like a mirror into how a person thinks. Everybody wants to be famous. You have to be ready to deal with the consequences. Mm. And I'm not sure when you said this.
I'm not sure when I said it either, but recently, that's crazy because recently I had dinner with 50 Cent, our guy, and he said, there's no sympathy for winners. That's a quote. I'm into quotes too.
Yeah.
And so my quote, when he told me that, I was like, wow. And ain't that the truth? And so,
what do you think that means?
Well, in our cases, there is no sympathy for winners. In our cases, everybody wants the American dream. The richest people in the world, they're not happy. If you look where I live, across the water, there's mansions on the water. These people are not happy for some reason if they're not famous and we don't know that they're wealthy.
Right.
And so there's people who look at us and say, man, you made it. You got the dream. You're on movies, you're on TV shows, you're a rapper. We don't want to hear your shit, your problems. You know, we got our own problems. There's no sympathy for winners. They can't relate to us being normal, regular human beings. And when me and you talk off the phone, we could get right to it. We're talking about your moms. I was talking about my moms.
Right.
And I thought about that all day too, Dom, right?
Yeah.
Because we're at a stage where not just us, but people who are around our age, where a lot of our parents are ill or going through things. And so now we got to return the role if we're loving kids.
Yeah. If we're doing what we were raised to do. Yeah.
So we turn it back. And you know, I got 12 stepbrothers and sisters. My father gets sick. None of them come to the hospital. I'm the only one to stop everything I do. I fly back in. I'm there with my father. Same thing with my mother. I take care of them. And I think that's the right thing to do. You know, I feel like it's, you know, some people meet this road where they feel like, if you meet a wife and you have kids, that's your new family. Your mother and father ain't really your family no more. This is your family. I disagree with that. We're all coming to this time to where we got to return the love and be there for our parents, which is a tough time.
I know from interviews and talking to you, the admiration you have for your mother, the sacrifices your mother made. My mom came here 1969 with 2 kids. I was born later on in 76 and worked all the time. I didn't know we didn't have money because my mom, you know, always provided a clean household, food always on the table. My father worked 7 days a week. I couldn't see myself buying all these things for myself, knowing that my mom had a mortgage or my mom had this. Look, when you're sick and you get old, and I have a really big problem with this country, the way they deal with old people. You go out the way you came in. You come out helpless. The only problem is you're aware of it. You're old, but you know you have the brains. You could think. When you're a baby, you don't know any better. And I think of what my mom is going through, and if she didn't have me or my other brothers around, how she would be taken advantage of, you know? So I commend you for doing what you did for your mom, because I know it's not an easy thing, Joe. It's not an easy thing.
Yeah, it's horrible because society don't care about the people who paid the way for us. They paid their dues. They took care of us. And it seems almost like they all, you wish them away or you wish them dead. And that's sad. And so we got to protect, you know, not just our parents, but everybody, wherever we see injustice.
Right.
We got to bring that to the forefront, man, because, yo, we're not alone, Dom. It's
a lot, yeah.
Everybody gets to this stage if they care, because I've met people who don't care about their parents.
I've had conversations, and it throws me back when someone says, "Yeah, I haven't talked to this family member for a certain amount of time." Look, you know what's going to be the hardest thing for me when I go back on the road and this quarantine stuff is over, and hopefully they put a lid on this COVID and everybody's safe and, you know, we travel. So a big thing, look, I'm going to be 45 years old next month. I'm going to miss hearing my mother's voice call me on the phone every day.
Oh, yeah, we all are, bro.
You know?
I'm going to tell you, Dom, I don't think we should talk. We should look that far. Because let me tell you, I'm a mama's boy, bro. And yesterday was Valentine's, and her flowers got delivered. She called me up. She was happy. Like, I'm there twice a week. They live like an hour from me. I'm there twice a week. It's like, we're just so blessed that they're still here with us. Because a lot of my friends, who lost parents, they're like, yo, you should be happy. Cause my mother and father, they a trip, bro. They crazy. So they work me over. But it's like they're like, yo, be lucky. Be happy that you
enjoy it, Joe. Enjoy it.
Yeah, that's what they keep telling me. So lately I've been trying to enjoy it even more than ever. Like, because a lot of my friends have lost, you know, two of my friends lost their fathers in the last year. And they're just like, yo, be like, my father's crazy, man. My father's great, but I love him to death. My dad, but they like, yo, enjoy it. Enjoy him driving you crazy. It's going to be a day you're going to have that.
I lost my dad in 2019. So I could tell you that your friends are absolutely correct.
Yeah, Dom.
Follow their advice, Joe.
I know that's what I'm doing. I'm over here watching, just before I got on with you, I'm watching Kingdom, the movie Jamie Foxx is on, one of my favorite.
Yeah.
And I watched it maybe 100 times. And every time I watch it, I love this movie, right? Because I'm intrigued with, like, Middle East and all that. And
espionage. Yeah.
How many times do you watch a movie when you love a movie?
I'm a big movie buff. I'm a big fan of movies from the 70s. I think that's the golden age of cinema. From 67 to like before Star Wars, anything in between there, I think is the golden age of cinema. Because the writers, the Scorsese's, the De Palma's, the Freakins, those guys were able to write, shoot their movies, write their movies, and studios kind of stayed a little away and were more creative that way. You bring up Kingdom regarding Jamie Foxx. I work with Jamie Foxx on Miami Vice. He's one of the one of the most solid guys I met in this business. And I think it was in Miami where I met you when I was filming. Because I can't pinpoint where I met you, Joe. I can't pinpoint it. I don't know if it was at Jimmy's or...
It might have been Jimmy's. It could have been Miami. I don't know. I've been all over, you know?
But I love Jamie in Collateral.
Oh, yeah. I love what's my man? The main guy. What's Tom Cruise in that movie?
Unbelievable. It was Michael Mann. Michael Mann film. I mean, it's new technology.
Blu-ray. He was almost like a robot, right? Like
a robot killer. A robot killer. The way he handled the gun. Yeah, yeah.
You know, yesterday was Valentine's Day. And, you know, we still, for the most part, we're like quarantined. So I go from my house to Khaled's house or my mother's house. That's it. That's the triangle. So I was in Khaled's house. He did this over-the-top, beautiful thing for his wife. My wife was there. They were enjoying the weather. We live in Miami. You know where I was at? And I had the best Valentine's in my life. He got this giant movie theater. I was in there all day.
Dang.
From the morning to the night. I watched the Judas and the Black Messiah.
That's on my list.
I watched, it's a cool movie. Yeah. I watched Denzel, The Little Things.
I watched that over the weekend too.
And I wound up ending it with Your Honor. How incredible is Your Honor? Have you been watching?
No, I got to get it. I have a few friends on that show. I got to get into that show.
Best show of the year when you see this.
Yeah, I've heard.
I like the one, I don't remember the name, but I like the one that Nicole Kidman starred in.
The Undoing.
The Undoing?
The other one was really, really great. But this one, Your Honor, when you watch this, oh my God. Like, Nah, Your Honor, something.
Yeah, Brian Cranston. You know, he elevates. It's that show. From what I hear, is terrifically written, terrifically acted. But you know,
it's going to change the way all TV shows or series are going to be made because of Your Honor, because it's almost like an octopus. It has so many things going on.
So many storylines.
Too much, though.
Yeah.
Like blowing your mind. I'm like, oh my God, this shit is crazy.
That whole thing started out, you know, back in the day with some of the HBO shows. Like, you could even go as far back as like Oz, then The Wire, then Sopranos. Well, Sopranos, then The Wire. And where a lot of these shows, you know, these serialized shows, they would start out with these all these different storylines. But now, you know, they're trying to flip the script. They're trying to add extra ingredients to the sauce. And I'm curious to see this show because I hear nothing but great things about it.
No, it's incredible. Yesterday was the grand finale. It was amazing. We watched every Sunday. Every Sunday we made it like a Your Honor night. And, man.
Movie night. Yeah, movie night.
Movie night with Your Honor got us in there every Sunday. Like, you know, it's amazing. And
you ever think about going into television, producing something?
Yeah, I sold the movie to Warner Brothers. It's called King Kato. And it's about a friend of mine that he was like the biggest, he's the biggest drug.
I know who it is. I know who it is. From the Bronx?
No. He's from Chicago. And okay. So he's the English-speaking Mexican who was serving the whole country. And he eventually got killed, allegedly, over his wife by El Chapo's nephew, who ended up with his wife. Long story, these are the same guys who told on El Chapo. They gave up El Chapo. So it's just, you know, it's just Kanye West is in the movie. Like, It's just that whole Chicago shit.
You ever think about doing, like, your power version of the Bronx? Creating a star? Because we're from the same stomping grounds, pretty much. I'm from 187th and Prospect. You're from 161st, right?
165th and Trinity.
Trinity, right.
Like, so 10 you're not blocks that far. From Southern Boulevard, 10 right. blocks from Yankee Stadium.
I grew up smelling that zoo, man, every morning.
Wow. One so block you over. By Mapes. So you used to play softball by Mapes?
I played football there. I played a little bit of organized, like the summer leagues, the baseball leagues. But I was on 187th and Prospect next to Arthur Avenue.
There's a famous park right there. It's called Mapes.
Oh, I know Mapes.
Yeah, I got a story there. I used to play softball. If you let me tell it, I'm a legend in the Bronx.
Go ahead, tell right? it. Go ahead.
Since I was a kid. No, I'm telling you, I made every All-Star game, not because I'm Fat Joe, because I could pitch. I'm a pitcher. So I go up there. I go up there to Mapes one time, and I played on a team. And this guy bats up who's like the – and I'm already Fat Joe. This guy bats up. He's like the legend of the whole area. His name was Boomer. So long story short, the most embarrassing thing happened to Boomer that ever happened in softball. The one rule is you shouldn't strike out in softball.
Never.
I struck Boomer out.
Is this lob or fast? Fast pitch or lob?
Fast pitching, but struck this guy. You know, every area got a guy who's a home run king who every time he touches the ball is a home run. But I struck him out. And the whole park was like, oh, shit. And me, you can imagine, Fat Joe talk shit to you while you walking back to the dugout. Fuck you, you bum. Who's the Boomer? Who's the king? I'm making a movie out there, right? So long story short, is a park called Mapes. Huge, gigantic park. Like, it's huge. Right around the corner from where you talk about. And there's a building in the middle of center field. And the park is built into the building. Right. Big building.
I know it. Yeah. Yep.
The next time the guy bats up, I pitch. This guy hits this shit so hard that to this day, the softball is stuck on the fucking wall of the building. And everybody says, that's the ball. That motherfucker left the ball up on the wall.
He wasn't going out like that, man.
Nah, he wasn't going out. Like, forget about it.
I love playing softball, man. I mean, you couldn't keep me in the house. I would, in the summertime, I would run out with my glove. And then when I was done, so say we were going to play Skelzy or something. You know what I mean? So
from the Bronx to no Skelzy.
Exactly. And I would throw my baseball glove because our apartment faced the front of the street on Prospect. We lived on the second. I would throw the glove on the fire escape so I wouldn't have to go upstairs.
Yeah.
Me personally, I used to use the tar from the street, put it in the milk. The milk cap?
For your top.
Yeah, some people did the crayons. I like the tar from the street.
People did crayon. People did clay.
Clay.
People did.
Clay was good.
And used to pop 5 boxes. Y'all, Skelzies was the shit, right?
It was great.
Y'all, Skelzies was the shit.
Manhunt.
What happened in them times, when we was kids, I think it was less violent. And it was more about community. It was more about having fun. I would play from sunup to sundown. My mother would call me out the window about 6 to 8 times. I would ignore her. Yeah. And then my father would come with that whistle. That whistle was so loud, it'd be like, yeah. The whole block would be like, yo, you better get your ass upstairs. Ernesto whistle. I had to run home. One whistle And my ass was in that house.
I remember. So underneath the building, there was the bodega, right? So now outside the bodega, you had Galactica, Bump and Jump. You had all like a couple of video games, right? So I would call up to my mom. She would throw me like 50 cents, put them in aluminum foil, and throw it out the window. It's hard to explain to people.
Nah, it's hard to explain, but that's
what... But you know exactly what I'm talking about. My mom didn't come downstairs and call. She called me through the window.
If Mr. Softy came, you screamed to your mother out the window, and then she would throw the money out the window for you to buy the Mr. Softy.
Or the lemon ices. Or the scrap, or the ice.
Yeah, the ices, yeah. Or the coquitos. And, you know, shout out my godfather recently. My godfather's Dominican. And I just recently found out he passed away. For years, I was trying to find him. He went to Santo Domingo and I couldn't find him. He owned the bodega. And I was going there and I literally had blonde hair and green eyes. And in my hood, is 99% black. But nobody told me, like, and you look back now, I would ask my mom, so what the fuck you had me here? Like, I look like the Beatles in the middle of the fucking hood. Like, what's wrong with you?
Me too. I have blonde hair, blue eyes.
No, if I had a blonde hair, blue eyed kid in my community here, I'd be like, yo, we gotta go somewhere. Like, what the fuck, you got this kid running around here, right? And so my godfather, he would always ask her that. But we were real, real poor. We had nowhere to go. And he would be like, yo, let me baptize him. But recently through Instagram, his granddaughter contacted me and said, yo, he had passed away like 15 years ago. Wow. I sent people in Santo Domingo to look for him because this man, one of the greatest men in the world, but the bodega, it was nothing like a 50 cent hero. Spice ham and cheese. 50 cents.
Yep.
And you was good to go.
All the pickles in the pickle jar.
Ooh.
The big pickles. Yeah. Right, man, you guys know, I'm telling you, man. I would not trade it for anything in the world, man. I would not trade it where I grew up.
So we're building a new house, thank God. I'm moving back up top. I'm moving back to Jersey. I've been in Miami 18 years, but I'm moving back to Jersey because I got a couple of clothing stores, sneaker stores, doing really, really well. And I want to expand the business, expand the brand. And I got to be there firsthand to do it. Up NYC.
That's the name of the store?
Yeah, that's the name of the store. Okay. I got two stores now in Washington Heights. Now, my daughter, we moving. She says, Dad, we need a chef. I said, by the way, my wife's cooking now. We never had a chef in our life. She's like, Dad, we need a chef, right? I'm like, oh, sure, baby, whatever you want. She was like, no, but I don't want a ghetto chef. I want the guy who knows how to make truffle pasta every day. I said, oh, you want the truffle?
She got to call my girl. My girl's Argentinian. And she loves truffles. Great cook, cooks everything with truffles.
Yo, it's unbelievable. My daughter's like, we need the chef with the truffle pasta. I said, man, you will come a long way for spice ham and cheese. Like, this is some bullshit. I tell you something.
Yeah.
You only live once. What?
You raised her palate, you know? You brought in her palate.
Yeah, she was born like that. Let me tell you something. I would take my daughter, my kids, I would take them to a restaurant when they 5 years old and they'd be like, prime rib, medium rare. I'm like, yo, what the fuck y'all ordering prime rib? Bone-in ribeye, please. Butter on the...
It's juicier with the bone.
Yeah, they knew the shit. These guys knew how to order early.
Just to change it up a little bit, you don't have diabetes no more?
Well, no, right? And
because you look great. You look great.
Thank you, man. I could be better, but... for the most part, I had diabetes when I was a kid, teenager, like insulin and everything. And then as I got older, a lot of my friends started dying. So I started losing weight, being health conscious. So believe it or not, I lost like half a human. And so the diabetes went away. Now, I still live as if I'm diabetic. Like, so the soda is a Diet Pepsi. Anything I eat sugar-free. Anything, because I already know I could catch diabetes like this.
Like that.
So the answer to you is, yeah, it's gone, but I always live my life as if I'm a diabetic still.
Still very cautious.
Stupid. And start eating cakes and all this crazy shit. It's coming back.
Yeah. What has this COVID experience? Have you embraced anything new during this COVID experience?
Right. I embraced the show. I learned more about social media. The show's on Revolt TV now, the big, big show. I love talking to the people, communicating with them. I become like a therapist for the people, but at the same time, they helped me survive this COVID. And I would have never, right? So if you studied me, if this was war, you'd be like, he really doesn't know social media. He doesn't know Instagram. He doesn't know. So Joe can make his music, but his flaw is he doesn't connect with his fans on social media. COVID forced me to sit in the house and learn how to connect with my fans.
You do it well.
I got a show on Triller coming on, which is a masterclass with Fat Joe, teaching people every week about the music business, the ins and outs. That's a big check.
The traps.
I turn the big, big show. They show it in Revolt now every Tuesday, 10 p.m. Eastern. So me staying home, I found a way of making a great living, not trying to brag, a great living sitting home. And I never thought I could do that. So I always thought you make music and you tour. That's how you get your money. So now I would say when it comes back, of course, my favorite part of the whole music business is performing and seeing the fans and partying with the fans. But now I'll find a way to do shows, do the TV show thing, do the, you know, at the end of the day, the goal is to be like the new Arsenio Hall. That's what I'm trying to do.
The reason why I think you're able to do all this and stay home and still make and realize that you can still make a living, because Joe, you put in the work. You've been in this game for so long that, of course, people are going to want to work with you. They're going to want to do things. For instance, like when did you know that music needed to be part of your life? When did you realize, like, This is, look, I know where we grew up. I know where we could have ended up. You know what I mean? When did you say, forget about this, I'm going this way?
Well, I was going this way, and then they invented the RICO law. And the RICO law was made for John Gotti and the mafia. And it took them down, right? And so the RICO law, the people who don't know, is two people just got to say, Fat Joe sent me to do this, and you're done. If they got the same corroborating story, right? So I was hustling, and a bunch of my friends, every week it was like, yo, you heard about the East Tremont boys? 60 of them got locked up. Yo, you heard about the Southern Boulevard boys? 60 of them got locked up. And I would be like, how? And they'd be like, on the phone talking shit. What? So I knew I had to change my life. So I went to the Apollo Theater and went to amateur night at the Apollo, and I won 4 weeks in a row. That's when Red Alert asked me to give him a promo for the radio, which was my first single, Flojo. I put it on there. He would play it every week. And then the record label came and got me Chris Lighty, rest in peace, signed me, and the rest is history. But to tell you about music, if I walked in my mother's house right now, unexpectedly, right now, she'll be sitting in front of the TV listening to the oldies. My family has always played music. My son is autistic, Joey, my oldest son. Joey's like this with the music every fucking day. Like every day, like we just, it's something about music and my family that we love it.
Yeah. It's a mood changer. It's the same thing for me. I could be driving in my car. I could put on a piece of music.
One of my favorite things to do, Dom, on Earth, is driving my car and listen to music.
Me too.
You know, but it's COVID. I don't want to bump into nobody with no mask. I don't want to get into an accident. But the one of my most favorite things on Earth is to sit in my car and drive around and play music.
Me too. And if a song comes up, the beautiful thing with me, for me anyway, with music is I could listen to a song and it could bring me back to someplace.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
no, it's like, the same thing. It's the same thing with me. Also, smell. Like I can smell something that a teacher of mine wore in elementary and be like, "Oh shit, Miss Wickens." No, I'm serious. Like, I got a friend. She owns a company. She made this hand sanitizer, which smells so good. But every time I put it on, it reminds me of Hotel San Juan in Puerto Rico. Every time I go there, it got that smell.
Yeah.
And smell and music both does the same thing.
It's there for me too. But you know, music is my. I always say, you know, when I'm filming and I'm in front of the camera, it's very therapeutic for me because I kind of feel like I'm alone. When I'm alone in the car, listening to a piece of music, if something old or something from the 80s comes on, and I remember being, you know, in my teens or before my teens, adolescent, and know when I heard it, I was at a beach.
That's right.
In Connecticut, a little kid with the bullshit styrofoam cup trying to pick up the guppies.
On the boombox. Let me tell you something. Me and my family went every Sunday to Orchard Beach.
Yeah.
And every single Sunday, my father got lost. Don't fucking know. Every Sunday.
It's one way in, one way out.
He go around them circles in Orchard Beach and be fucking lost. I'd be like,
oh, the roundabout.
This way.
Yeah.
The roundabout.
Yeah.
You don't know what you talk about. This every fucking Sunday we got lost.
Well, you make one wrong turn, you wind up in New Rochelle or you wind up in City Island.
Yeah, you know, and back then the Puerto Ricans, we used to use baby oil and Pepsi.
Oh, we used it too. Shorts, I didn't even have a bathing suit. I used to cut my jeans.
Yeah, that's right.
You know? The fire hydrant. So, Joe, who are some of, for the people listening into Dominic's Den, who are some of the influential rappers who you felt paved the way for you? I know.
I love them all, but I got three, right? And I love them all. The first one's KRS-One for being from the Bronx.
Right.
To me, he put on the best stage show ever. He's the first person to ever make me even think about consciousness. I remember hopping the train with a Walkman and running to the last car and on some gangster shit. And I pressed play and he got airplanes flying, overseas people dying, politicians lying, I'm trying. And I was just like, I was just open to a whole new world that I never even knew exists. Politics and war and all the consciousness he used to talk about. Second is LL Cool J, just because the man was fly. The man was just like, he was a ladies' man. He was what we wanted to be. He was riding the convertible Benzes. His style was fly.
At a young age.
He was the original Justin Bieber. No bullshit.
No bullshit. I know Todd.
So, just so you know that, LL Cool J was the original Justin Bieber. He was on fire since he was like 14, 15. So LL is number two, and three is Heavy D. Rest in peace.
Heavy D.
Heavy D made me feel good to be a big boy. Made me care about how I dressed.
And he was light on his feet. For a big guy, he was light on his feet.
Light on his feet.
He could move, right?
I fucking loved it.
Oh, good energy music, man. Good energy
and
music.
And what's so special about these three guys that I told you about just now is I got to be all their friends. So imagine you come from where we come from, 187 from Prospect, 165, and we idolize these people to only in turn become their friends and hang out with them. It's surreal. It's fucking, it's nuts.
That's when you feel like you made it, though, right? I mean, there were times. I know you're very friendly with LL. I mean, I've seen you. I seen you interview him, which was a great interview, by the way. I think you did it a little while ago.
You know, and I love Heavy D, LL, KRS. I love everybody, right? But those were the three that molded Fat Joe. If you look at the Fat Joe prototype with making music, show, how I dress, everything, it's them three. Another thing I did was years ago, I didn't know how to talk and articulate myself in the interviews. And I would watch hours and hours of tape on the VHS of LL Cool J doing interviews and KRS-One doing interviews. And I studied them to do an interview.
Yeah.
Crazy.
You know what those three guys you mentioned, they're like Renaissance men. They're the complete package. You know, I always thought, I love KRS-One for the same reasons you did. I'm from the Bronx, you know? I mean, we didn't have too many people, you know? Everybody's from Brooklyn, Queens. He was our guy. Then you became our guy. That's what I'm saying. When FloJo came out.
Hey, hold up, Dominic, before you go. Right? I got a special phone call today. I'm not even going to lie to you. I almost teared up. I almost choked up. I'm going to tell you the truth.
Okay.
I got a call from a good friend of mine, Steve Rifkin, who really put me in the game. I get a phone call from Steve Rifkin. He says, hey, Joe, you know I don't bother you, but somebody wants to interview you on their podcast. And I was like, all right, who is it? He said, Chaz Palmieri. Bro, I almost cried, Dom.
Yeah, I know Chaz very well. Gave me my break.
And I've looked up to him my whole life and being a Bronx guy.
You're going to love him.
It was overwhelming me. I was like, fuck, Chaz knows who I am, man.
Yeah.
And I studied these guys from the Golden Elephant on Morris Park. And everywhere they used to hang out with Joe Pesci used to hang out in the Bronx. So I know all about them more than they know that I know about them. And when he told me this, I was like, fuck, I made it to the Bronx alma mater.
He also tweeted you. And he a very nice tweet. He tweeted you. Yeah, he tweeted you. I think something about.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, he did. He tweeted you. Tweeted something, and then he replied to your tweet. And it was very complimentary. I know. Chaz doesn't live too far from me here, and Chaz gave me my break. And Bronx Tale was my first film.
You know what Bronx Tale means to me?
What?
I mean, bro, I lived my whole life behind Bronx Tale. You know, my whole life, you know, one of the biggest lessons, and in every movie, whether fictional or fact, the reason why I watch movies is because there's always a lesson you should learn from each movie. Right? And in Bronx Tale was when Calogero would chase the guy for $12 every day.
Yeah.
Sonny told him, hey, you got rid of this guy cheap, man. This guy don't pay you your money back. Why are you chasing him every day? You got rid of him for $12. You got rid of him cheap. Leave him alone.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's what you got to do. You know, I got shot. I got shot by a guy who owed me $10. And I used to fuck with this guy every day. Yo, where my $10? Where my $10? One day he came and with a gun and shot me.
Because of fear.
Because of fear. And he was a punk. But that's what Sonny was trying to tell Kalogia. They're like, yo, you scared that guy too much. He might hurt you one day out of fear. You bugging out.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you know what I mean. When we talk about the Bronx, you say KRS, then Joe. For me to get summoned, you know, you not so much for you because you know him, but for me to get summoned by Chaz to do a podcast was like, almost cried.
He's great. I'm glad you had that opportunity. I really am because I
yeah, but I choked up. We're gonna set it up. I told him, please, it's an honor.
You're gonna enjoy it. He's a great guy. He's a great guy. Look, I know you gotta go, but I have I call this part Dom's hot seat, where I just throw like these random questions at you. All right. Okay. All right. So, you see, I told you Joe was gonna cover all these questions on his own. We don't need this. Joe, what's one of your biggest pet peeves? Like, what gets under your skin?
What gets under my skin? What gets under my skin, ass? Huh? Unloyal people. This is what my daughter, 14 years old, says.
Smart. Yep. Smart girl.
I hate unloyal people.
So do I. If you could go back in time and give yourself a piece of advice, how old are you? And what's that piece of advice?
If I could go back and give myself a piece of advice, how old am I? I'm in my 20s, and I'm telling Big Pun and me, yo, let's go on the greatest diet ever made. And maybe we could have changed, you know, the outcome of Pun's passing so early. So I would get help for both of us because both of us was in bad shape.
Where did you discover Big Pun?
Outside of Bodega by Prospect Avenue. It was 166 in Tinton. Prospect's one block over.
Over.
Right. I came out of a bodega and he was out there rapping and I knew he was the best.
Wow. Top five, man. He's in my top five. Joe, who's your hero?
Who's my hero?
Who's your hero?
I have a lot of heroes, but...
That's fine.
I would say my mother. You know, my mother worked three jobs. It was four of us. You know, my mom's was the number lady from the number book, from the number spot. And one day she got locked up. And I went to the precinct. I brought up. My mother would eat. Remember the ghetto Chinese shrimp and lobster sauce, right? So I got people to give me money, and I took it to the priest and gave it to my mother. Now I remember telling my mother, Ma, you can't do this no more. I need you. And she changed her life and went back to school, got a legit job, and you know, my mom's my hero.
That's a fascinating story. I know I've heard you speak about your mom and everything she's done. It sounds like a really remarkable woman.
Yeah, she's strong, man.
Yeah, really strong. Really strong. If you could be a character from a movie or TV show for a day, what would it be? What character, what show?
I would be the Invisible Man and I would rob every bank in the Dom, they would have to give me invisible bags too to put.
All right. Your favorite quote or lyric?
Ooh. My favorite quote or lyric? A quote? I'll give you my quote. My quote is, you got to be in the game. You never know.
Mm-hmm. You got to
stay in the game.
Yes, sir.
You never know.
And my colleague, a really good friend of mine, I think you might even know. I don't know if you know Joseph Shakura. He played Tommy on Power.
That's my guy.
Yo, he's
so
great.
Happy he got his own show. They're gonna
do
Chicago.
And he's got a development deal too, which is great because it's well deserved. So, but he has a question on Twitter. What came first, the graffiti or the music?
Well, graffiti started Terror Squad. Terror Squad was a graffiti crew. And the guys, Gizmo and Cosmo from my projects, real story, they went on, they started robbing banks. So they outgrew graffiti and they made me the president. And so I was writing graffiti all over. Then turned into music, streets, whatever. But for me, graffiti, I'm still painting. I can't do it in the street. I want to do it illegally, but I know I'll get sued crazy. So I can't do it. I gotta just do it.
If I went in the back of your car, in the trunk, will I see the cans? Are the cans there? Just like souvenirs. Just like they gotta be close by, just in case.
You will see. Actually, there's a guy named Mr. Flower Fantastic. We made replicas of the can, and I do have it in the trunk of my Rolls Royce. It looks like a spray can, but it really ain't. Yeah.
Joe, I know you got to go. Thank you so much for blessing the show, man. God bless you.
You're great. Guys.
Yeah. All right, man. Stay blessed.
All right, my brother. God bless, dog.
God bless you. All right.
You got to flow, Joe. You got to flow, Joe. You got to, I'm so much flavor, you can taste.